Hello and welcome to episode 8 of the United Stand podcast. I'm joined by Flex. How you doing?
Yes, what's happening, man? How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Not a bad result for United at the weekend against Liverpool, but lots of games coming forward now. We're going to be talking about Ed Woodward's latest comments, Patrice Evra, Fred saying he's the new Carrick, or well, not quite that. Whether we can get top four and where we go from here, as well as many other things as well. I'm sure we'll touch on James Maddison as well. Thanks everyone who is listening. Make sure that you are subscribing, whatever platform you're on, and please do give us some 5-star ratings. Really appreciate that. But let's get into this game at the weekend, which is Norwich. I was looking at this last night and I thought, you know, we dropped to 14th because Sheffield United beat Arsenal. It's funny with Arsenal, isn't it? They're all Emery out, but actually they're 5 points ahead of us in fifth place and they're Emery out. Does that, you know, very, very quickly actually, just ask you that, does that show how lowered our expectations have been as a fan base? But the fact that we are in 14th place after 9 games, we're averaging just over a point a game, which is relegation form. Arsenal, 5 points ahead of us, in fifth place. They're only 4 points off second, and they want to get rid of a manager, whereas we're being told by our chief executive of the last 6 years of failure that we should all just sit down and be happy and patient.
Exactly. It is that. It's been rammed down our throats that we have to accept what's going on because of the position we're in, because we've got to go 100 steps backwards before we can start going forwards. It is slightly different in terms of the situations, though, because they've got a bit more of it. They've got a settled squad, they've got goal scorers, and they've backed their manager in the transfer window, so they're looking at it like they're not seeing anything different to Wenger. I think with us, we can see how bad our squad was, and we know how long it's going to take to move on a lot of players, get a lot more players in. But having said that, the form that we're in, like you said, 14th, I mean, look. Yeah, we're all trolling Arsenal last night. Well, I was anyway, for Arsenal being Arsenal. But the fact is that Sheffield United winning put them ahead of us.
You know what, though? Just to come back on that, though. I mean, I would even say that maybe you're falling into the trap. And I keep stopping myself falling into the trap, to be fair. Because if we go back to January in the FA Cup game when we stood outside the Emirates freezing cold, and we were like, yeah, we're not quite, and we went and won. And if you look at that team of Arsenal in January and you look at the team of United in January, we're no different apart from Herrera. We probably spent as much as them, just in different areas. We've improved with Maguire and Wan-Bissaka, and you could arguably say that Dan James is a better signing than Pepe at the moment. And yet, you're saying it, and you're not the only one, well, Arsenal are better than us. And actually, again, I think this is part of the propaganda smokescreen, that we're not. There is this. We finished the season in sixth. You know, Mourinho got the sack when we'd finished second. We've always been a top six team, and yet here we are in 14th. I mean, I think we're probably, realistically, we'll finish around 8th, but we're not where we were at the end of the season, yet the club and Ollie and even some fans are telling us now, well, this is where we should be. And I think, well,
no, we shouldn't be 14th.
I don't think this is, I think under Herrera apart, Why have we dropped off Arsenal? You know,
I wouldn't say Arsenal. When I'm saying Arsenal are better than us, I don't mean in terms of like they're far superior. I'm saying that they have things in their like they can score. They've got the ability to score goals. Yes, their midfield is shit, so they're not supplying, so they're not that much better than us.
Oh, they're a better side, but it's more about
exactly, and that is where that's why we're looking at Ollie. That's why we're looking at the coaching things, and that's why the fan base is already split on the Ollie situation. Because of that, it's like, how could we drop this far? We're regressing. All the things we've been speaking about in the past few months, where we've been horrendous, especially since the season started, this is why we're talking about all these things, because how have we dropped off this far? And I think that we've got to look at it entirely, like the whole thing. Yes, don't get me wrong, we know we're in a transition, but we're in a position where we are literally just above the relegation zone. And if we get, and if we're still there, round about Chris, the only thing that's saving Ollie now, well, two things. One is obviously the board just, they're not going to get rid of him. They're not. Unless we actually physically are in the relegation battle, which I know some people are saying we are right now because of the form, which is technically right, but it's still so early in the season. As much as we're only a couple of points off relegation, we're like, six or seven points off fourth, two wins. Like, it can just change within 2 weekends. Like, I know that sounds very far off, but this early, you have still got to remember that. Like, I think the problem with us is because we can't see our next wins coming, it's like, fucking hell, we're obviously in shit streak and we're pushing more to relegation, but we beat Norwich and we beat Bournemouth. Don't get me wrong, you can't see it happening right now, but if we do, then that pushes us way up, the higher up the table. It's so tight all through, like from fifth all the way down to like 14th is tight. It's weird how the season started. So it hasn't, the equilibrium hasn't kicked in yet in terms of the table. I don't even really like to look at the table too much now. It's just that we've been forced to because it's embarrassing. But
we're a quarter of the way through it though, aren't we? So you've got to take notice of it. But I think, you know, I don't think either of us can answer that. I think that the reality is that I look at it and go, we are being sold this old rebuild and we've got to take time. But nobody really wants to address the fact as to why Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was in charge of us against Arsenal twice last year. And both those games were at the Emirates and we thought, we've got a chance, we're as good as them. And here we are this season and we're being told, oh, we're miles off them. We're 2 years off being top four. And I'm like, yeah, but last season we were in a top four race, and what's changed? Nothing has changed other than the coaching. And you know what, if you are Ole in, and I still want to give him time, but that to me is the glaring elephant in the room that nobody wants to discuss, is that this drop off is unexplainable, unacceptable, and they're trying their very best to make out that it's normal. And the reality
is, if it does carry on, he'll be gone. He will be gone. If this carries on 14th, 15th, 16th to the end of the season, I'm sure he'll get sacked at the end of the season.
Well, I think
it's up to him to raise it up. He has to start getting results and quick, because even if it gets into the new year, January times, and we're still floating around there, the pressure is on, even with them saying they're backing him.
But the interesting thing is that at the weekend we are playing Norwich on Sunday. We're in 14th place. Yeah. Everton are playing Brighton. So whatever the result in that, we drop, because if Everton draw, they go above us. If Brighton win, they go above us. So we will be 15th at least after that Everton-Brighton game. Southampton are at home on Friday to Leicester. If they were to win, we'd drop. Newcastle, I think, are at home as well, so we could drop below them. And Norwich, if they beat us, we could be bottom three next Sunday night, or very, very close to it. And if you are bottom three after 10 games, I would say, what the hell are we doing as a football club? You can't be bottom three after 10 games. So,
that's peak.
I mean, I've got to be honest. I'm doing quite well on the predictions at the moment. So I said Arsenal wouldn't beat us. I said Liverpool wouldn't beat us. So I'm doing quite well at the moment. And I'll go for the hat trick and say, if Villa can go to Carrow Road and win 5-1, then I don't see how we can't win that game. Obviously, but I've seen Newcastle, so of course we can't. But if we did lose to Norwich, I've got to be honest, I think he's got to go. I think at some point, I don't want him to go, by the way. I still want him to do well. I'm not Ollie out. But I think if you lose to Norwich and you're basically in the bottom three after 10 games, and then you take into account last season and the inexplicable thing, what I've just said about there's no reason for us to be dropping off like this. I'm sorry, I'll give you the loo, Ollie, but you're going to have to take it. You're going to have to take the sack. And I would, but to be honest, I'll stick with what I always say, because I want to talk about Woodward as well in a minute or two. He would need to go as well, which won't happen, of course. It'll be Ollie who's the fall guy.
Exactly.
But I mean, seriously though, Flex, if we did lose to Norwich at the weekend and the results go against us and we are, you know, fourth from bottom or even in the bottom three after 10 games, I don't care what your future vision is. It's always about the now. You'd have to go, I think.
It would be very, very difficult to resist letting him go. But I wouldn't have. It's not going to happen.
I don't think it would.
It's not going to happen, because the vote of confidence that they're putting out, they're not going to say that a couple of days before the Liverpool game, then we get a draw and a loss in our next result and then sack him. They're not going to do it. What everyone needs to realise is that clearly the board is not really concerned about league position. They're completely willing to write off this season, and it's the level of write off. Like, we was willing to write off this season in terms of, right, if you finish a six, we kick on with this squad, six or fifth, you never know, we might get a chance to challenge for the top four. That's us writing off the season. That's turned into completely lowering the expectation to say, we trust in this process, the board, this is, we trust in this process, so that no matter what happens, unless we physically go down, we're going to trust in this process. And the problem that we would have is, if we did lose to Norwich and we was in the bottom three, the next game is Bournemouth away. You can't see us winning that, especially after losing to Norwich with awful confidence and struggling. And you know what more, what they're trying to do, which I didn't like post Liverpool game, was trying to sell the dream of a turnaround for me. Yeah. Like,
well, all the players are at it again, aren't they? Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't like that personally, because for me, the bigger test out of the two games is Norwich away.
Mm.
And if you know football, you'll understand why that's a correct statement, because I saw people, like players, playing the occasion. Yeah, against Liverpool,
which you do that against Liverpool, default. Which is why we predicted the draw.
You're supposed to do that. You're supposed to raise your game. You're supposed to run around. The crowd's supposed to be the 12th man. It's Liverpool at home. And if you take the emotion out of it, like I've been saying, it wasn't much different from our performances, apart from we had a bit more energy and hustled the opposition in the first half. And then the second half was like the same Man United. And we still didn't create that many chances. We still only scored one goal. And we still pretty much always concede one. So it was the same thing. It was the same thing. So everyone's saying, "Oh, play the five at the back, or the three with the four, or whatever, however you want to call it. Do that against Norwich." It's a different game. It's a whole different game. The onus is on us to go and break Norwich down. We can't sit back against them.
Yeah, which is what. Which again, I think it's like you say, if you know football, and that's not an arrogant statement. Some people know football more than others. Some people just watch it at the weekend. Some people live and breathe it. And like you said, Liverpool is an occasion. I was saying it, you were saying it, everyone's saying we're going to get beat 4-0. That would happen once in 20 times in an Anfield and Manchester game, because I've seen shit Liverpool teams beat brilliant United teams. It's a great lever, and it's probably one of the one games where you do play the occasion. But I said yesterday, and I don't know whether you were aware about this, we've taken 8 points from 12 games against Leicester, Liverpool, Arsenal and Chelsea at home. We've taken 2 points from 15 against Newcastle, Palace, Southampton, Wolves and West Ham.
Last season, mate. You know what I mean? Doing all right against the big teams. We're not even that good, because they used to actually beat the big teams, to be fair.
Yeah.
But we just can't nick points off our fellow rivals, which is mid-table and below.
It is frustrating, though, because I don't mind a long-term vision, and I know we're talking about this long-term vision, but I just don't believe it. I actually think the reason that Woodward and everyone wants us to get involved in a long-term thing is because no one's moaning, they keep making their money for the next couple of years, and then the future never happens. Yeah. And when you're as low as we are, it won't be long before we're eighth, and everyone will go, well, at least we're not 14th anymore. And we've lost sight of where we need to be. But the reality is, if after 10 games, Liverpool were 14th, or Man City were 14th, or Chelsea were 14th, or probably Arsenal were 14th, that manager would be gone. I think they'd be gone. And that just shows you that, you know, apparently, I just don't get it.
We're only not doing it because we just give Ollie the job. Let's put the facts out there.
Yeah.
If this was any other manager, like you just said, even at United, that had been there for a while. Like we saw it with Jose, he got sacked at Christmas.
Yeah, yeah.
For the same sort of thing. Worse, for better form than this, he got sacked on. So,
were you impressed with Ollie's tactics against... Because I'll forget to ask you this. Well, I heard Tactical Masterclass. I had my say on YouTube yesterday. Did you think that formation and that tactics was any different to what Sheffield United did to Arsenal and what they did to Liverpool?
It was set up to stifle Liverpool and not get beat heavily and try and get in their faces, and try and pen them in. Look, I don't
mind. It was an underdog performance, wasn't it? Really?
100%. It was basically not saying what Moyes said in the press conference, but showing it on the pitch when he was like Liverpool favourites. You know, he understood that we had to play a certain way against them because he doesn't trust in us right now. We don't trust in ourselves and we don't have it in us right now. Plus, being able to... and plus showing, like you said, we were underdogs. But the thing... I'm not going to fully criticise that because I did like the fact that he had a plan.
He had to play that way, I said that.
Do you know what I'm saying? He couldn't just throw us out there 4-3-3 or however you call it, 4-2-3-1, whatever. It was a plan. It was saying that, you know what, we can't just go toe-to-toe with Liverpool and have a shootout because we're not good enough. And we're not, you know. So that mixed in with the atmosphere plus the occasion, you know, the first half, we did okay. We stopped Liverpool playing. We didn't create loads ourselves, but we went in 1-0 up. So you have to say at that point, Ollie got it right. You have to say that because Liverpool, okay, they could have scored, and they got the goal disallowed as well. So it was kind of an even half. It's just that we took our chance. But if you go in 1-0 up, it means technically your tactics have done all right. And in the second half, we saw what we always see with United,
can't which is just
dropping off and can't hold a lead. People fade, taking too long to react to situations tactically, personnel wise, and that's what we saw. So it wasn't a tactical masterclass. I think he just did what surely he had to do. He couldn't just throw us out there how we'd been approaching games, because we would have been on toast. You know, Liverpool possession-based team.
I think I said this before on this podcast. The easiest tactics to play is counter-attacking football.
Of course.
And you shouldn't be able to play them, because opposition should stop you doing it, because basically it's like FIFA 20 this year. It is counter-attacking football. It's boring as shit.
If you're patient enough
to sit back, especially on ultimate team, if you just get everyone behind the ball and frustrate your opposition, and then you stretch them and hit them on the break, you'll win loads of games. And it's a frustrating tactic for the opposition, and it was interesting how, you know, effective it was, because Klopp was so frustrated. But I was speaking to a Liverpool fan yesterday, and I said, I don't know what you expected. I don't know why. I said, I get your frustration, but I don't think you understand that United, Old Trafford, is a very difficult place for the top six to come to. Like, Leicester had this problem. They came as favourites. They went away with a loss. Arsenal came as favourites. They went away with a point. Liverpool came as favourites. They went away with a point. And do you know why no one's beating us? Because we basically are parking the bus at home and hitting teams on the break. And United are a good team when teams do that. Obviously, Newcastle won't let us do that, because they're on perceivably
worse. The majority of teams won't. It's only going to work against the top five, and it won't work against all of them.
Probably, and it's hard for those top five sides when you are coming to Manchester United, who are traditionally an attacking side. You roll into 75,000 people, and you come up against a well-organised defensive side that sits back and then hits you on the break, and you've got to be the attacking team. And
it's like playing against the lesser teams. Like, that's what they experience against the lesser teams. But I tell you what, these things won't work that way away from home, I don't think. I think that it's easy to do it at Old Trafford, frustrate them and that, but I think if that was Anfield...
Well, we've got... That's the thing people aren't looking at, is it? Arsenal, Chelsea, Liverpool...
Exactly.
They've all been at home.
And so that means that there's a lot tougher times to come, and we haven't won these games. You know, we've drawn. We're just hanging in there against these top sides. So when we have to... I mean, we start the year at the Emirates, I think. That's the first game.
Yeah, and then we've got Liverpool quite close after.
So, mate.
Do you think we can... Well, there's two questions here. Do you think we can get top four? And do you think we can get Europa League football? Do you think we can get top four or top six?
Can't get top four. Top four's gone.
Yeah.
Like, I know it seems bonkers saying that, because, we're 7 points off top four.
7 points is... You know, people say, oh, it's only 7 points though, but you're talking about a team that can't string together two wins.
Exactly. At the moment, you can't talk about top four. No. Because the others are going to be... Even if you're looking at Leicester... the other's going to be too consistent. They won't drop off enough for us to catch them, plus sustain, plus build a lead above them, so that if we drop a couple of points, we're still in the top four.
Well, you know what? Friday night's a very interesting game for United, because it's Leicester, Southampton. If Southampton win, we go below them and drop a place. If Leicester win, we're 10 points off them. So
and Leicester will probably win. Where is that at King Power?
It's at Southampton. So we could probably do Leicester. That being a draw, but yeah. So top four, I think. Yeah, most people would say.
Even talking about this, it's pissing me off, man. Sorry, just to cut you off.
I totally agree.
Every single game, we're talking about, right, this team could fucking lose and then draw, so we could be 15th, and it's bollocks. Like, now I'm actually thinking about it, it's actually pissed me off.
That makes me very mad.
Look what we're doing. We're going, oh yeah, if Southampton fucking lose, or if that's what I was doing when I went to the Wolves game on the weekend, watching Southampton. I was looking at it in that vein. Fucking hell, man.
But I tell you what though, Flex, I said this yesterday on the YouTube channel. I said, if we get top four, I'll go to Old Trafford on the last game of the season and kiss everyone's arse. I don't think it's going to happen. But I also am starting to get really, like you get jealous of Tuesday, Wednesday Champions League. I'm not jealous anymore, because I think next season we'll be jealous of Thursday nights. I don't think you will be trekking round to bloody Farmers Fields in Azerbaijan next season. I think we're going to have the week off. I can't see how we're going to get Europa League, because Europa League is sixth.
You have to win the FA Cup.
I don't think we'd be good enough to do that. I think we will have no European football at all next season. Yeah. Do you think that's a little bit too far?
It's not too far. It's extremely doable. I was going to say happenable. That's not even a real word, is it? It's extremely realistic. It is, man. Like, get real. Look at the position we're in, and it's like, can you see it just turning around and us scoring loads of goals all of a sudden? I can't see it. I want this to turn around. I'm not being pessimistic, because I'm not trying to see any positive. But what positives can I take from how we've been playing? I can't see it. it's up to the team to show us. It's up to Ollie to prove why they're so relaxed and why the camp is confident, as they say, and everyone's happy and they're working towards it. They've got to start proving it. Yes, when Martial and Pogba come back, and sure, it's going to make us better, you would like to think, because, you know, against Chelsea, we obviously created chances. We took all of them in that game, which doesn't always happen. And against Wolves in the first half, I thought we were good. Since then, it's just gone consistently downhill. But to answer the question, of course, it's not inconceivable that we might not get any European football next year. And you know what? Might even be a decent thing. I know we always say it's nice to, you know, remember when people were saying, oh, remember earlier in the season, I remember you saying that people say, oh, we don't want to be on Thursday nights or whatever, and I remember for you saying, like, you know, at the end of the day, it's something we'd still rather be playing than not. But with the way we are and what we need to build on next season, and we need to keep fresh, it could be a blessing in disguise. Because what's happening now is that the games are coming thick and fast and we're not getting the right results, so it's breeding more negativity. We've got the squad's thin, so we've got to make like wholesale changes for Europa League, which you probably should do anyway.
Yeah.
And it kind of puts us worse off. We're not actually using the amount of games we have as a positive. They're actually a negative, where it's like, fucking hell, we can't hit the training ground and actually work on something because the games are coming thick and fast. So it's a catch-22, man. But it is a very real reality that we couldn't get into European football.
I'd be gutted. I'd be absolutely gutted. It would do my head in having to wait a week for every game. It really would. I would feel like a bloody Bournemouth. It would depress me. And I don't think a club the size of Manchester United should not be in that. And what worries me about that the most is that we've got all this, and I call it bullshit, I don't really care. You know, I know Ed Woodward can give his interviews out to bloody fanzines who don't ask him any decent questions, and I don't think they did. I think it was just a propaganda thing, which we'll talk about in a minute. But regardless of that, I don't believe a word the man says. I don't believe a word that comes out of Manchester United, because they've been proven to be, you know, talking shit for a long, long time. But what we do know about Manchester United is that it's all about the money. Now, if we don't get any European football next season, whether it's Europa League or Champions League, the loss in revenue will be huge.
Yeah.
And yet they're saying they're going to spend big. I just don't believe that. And also what amazes me is that if I'm sat here as a fan and you're sat there as a fan and the listeners are sat there as fans going, you know what, there's a very realistic chance we will not get European football next season. How the hell are the club that's about money not thinking that themselves and going, you know what, if we're going to get European football, we need to make a change quick. And yet they have got no, you're right, they've got no intention of doing it. And yet we're sat here now going, well, whether Ollie stays for 2 or 3 years or not, I really do have concerns that we're going to get European football. Whereas I think, you know, there probably is a manager out there that you could bring in. You could, well, I wouldn't bring Mourinho back, but I think if you did, we'd get top six by May. So, but there are managers out there who could probably do it. I'm like you. The more I think about it, the more angry I get, because it's a bloody mess. It's not a bit of a mess. Like, I think the Arsenal situation is a bit of a mess.
Yeah, exactly.
But United, you know, I didn't even get involved in the bantering of Arsenal, because I was like, yeah, it is funny, but bloody hell, they're still 5 points clear of us. We're in 14th, we're going nowhere. I don't trust most of the players. I don't have any reason to trust Solskjaer's CV, because he hasn't got one. I definitely don't trust Woodward. And yet you've still got fans out there who were sort of swallowing it. And I'm like, but that's your right. That is your right. I wish I could have what you're drinking, because I just cannot get past the frustration and despair of the situation.
Everything you said is the reason why we don't trust the board. We don't trust Edward. We don't trust what they're saying. We don't trust their statements. We don't trust their intent. We don't trust it. Why? Because of the evidence. Evidence proves everything, man. You can say you're going to change this direct of football, change the structure, pumping in money to this. We have not seen it ever. Like, in this ruthlessness. And I'm not talking about over the 6 years, as we've spent nearly £1 billion. So, you know, that's why we're looking at, like, well, hold on a minute. If we spent that much money and this is the best squad that we could potentially put out, why are people not losing their jobs above? Like, they're picking the managers. They're giving the go-aheads for players. They're producing long-term strategies of where we should and shouldn't be. So that's why we're looking above. And you're right. As soon as we start to drop off, playing midweek games. We already know what's going to happen. We've announced records fucking revenue this year. It won't be record revenue next year. It won't. Can't be. You know? So when it does come down to money, then they're just going to go back on what they even promised us, which is the fact that they're going to keep Ollie and stick to this long-term thing. As soon as the Glazers see that fucking the money's not coming in as it was and they are taking a commercial hit, it becomes a lot more difficult for them to ignore it. They're ignoring it now and going down this long-term route because it's easy to say that. And like you said, Ollie can be the scapegoat because they just give him the job. Looks bad if they sack him. And not that he's a yes man, but he's just happy to be there, you know? So getting rid of him right now would, to them, looks worse. But as it continues and then it becomes commercially detrimental, that's when I think you'll see the board and the Glazers, etc., start looking at it when it affects their actual pockets. So yeah, on what you're saying, it is why we cannot believe a word that they're saying, because the evidence goes before them. Just looking at a stat now, you know, Sheffield United got one of the best defences in the league.
Yeah, they've hardly spent anything, have they? I said that last night, actually.
Hardly spent anything. Goals conceded, they've only conceded 7, least in the league. Conceded chances in open play, 5. That's first in the league. Save percentage, 80%. Like, they're outdoing us. And this is why you've got to look at it like, it's not just about long-term vision, man. Because if your short-term vision or your short-term form is not good, you won't even get to the long-term. That's the problem.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there, because that's my issue. This is why, when people are saying, why are you so negative? Because I keep telling people this. Long-term visions are fine, but there's got to be something here now. Yeah. And Sheffield United have spent no money. Everyone tipped them to go down. And good coaching has got them to mid-table. They're organised, and you know, and yeah, here we are. We still spent decent money in the summer. We still got some of the world's best players, arguably, and we're performing like we are. But I mean, my theory on all of this is that the reason Woodward is so adamantly behind Solskjaer is because he knows if he sacks Solskjaer, then it won't just end at Solskjaer. The fans will go absolutely mad about him as well.
Exactly.
So it's a horrible situation to be in as a fan base, because they're basically protecting each other. Solskjaer knows that Woodward will get a load of crap as well, and Woodward knows he'll get a load of crap. So they're stuck with each other, whether that's right or wrong, and they're protecting each other. That's why he's sort of become unsackable in many ways. But what I wanted to ask you about was the summer, because all this talk about Maddison and everybody else and what we're going to do in January, we had that chat at the end of the summer, and it's like, well, again, why trust you? But why are you so incompetent that you're talking about signing players in January when you didn't sign them in the summer? And I wanted to get your opinion on this, because we all assume it's all assume it's Woodward, but Ole Gunnar Solskjaer did a very interesting interview with Gary Neville last week and basically said, and Woodward said it as well, Woodward said, I don't do the footballing decisions, it's the manager. And Ole said, I'm in charge, money was there, the right players weren't. So basically, the lack of midfield is on Ollie, which I know was something that you didn't really want to pin on him a couple of weeks ago, but he's come out and took ownership of that, which is shocking, really.
He has, which he said. But then then you've got to look at it like, we want someone to blame and we want to say, well, okay, fair enough, that's his fault. But that means that the player that he actually wanted to get, whether it was Maddison, whether it was fucking...
Well, it was Longstaff, wasn't it? I don't get that at all.
Exactly. That means the player that he perceives as the one, the right one, didn't come. But the players that we were linked with, because the link with Fernandes was more from the fans as it got to the end of the transfer window and we spoke to all the journos, it wasn't really concrete. We were never really in for him or a proper central attacking midfielder. So it was the likes of Longstaff, and then that flipping, what's his name, what's that one from Southampton as well, I can't remember his name, but
Lamina
for a little bit, you know, where's he now? That is concerning, because of the player that it looked like he badly wanted to get, that he is saying wasn't available, looks like it was fucking Longstaff.
Yeah.
And fucking hell,
another Brexit,
his brother looks better than him now. Yeah. So it is peak, man, because, and look, about January and that, like, if you couldn't get them 6 months ago, I don't see what's going to have changed. If it's the long term, if it's the actual player that you really want, like the longevity, the age, all of that, they're not going to be available in January. They're not. Their club's not going to have changed their stance on them since January. That can only happen at the end of a season. So unless it is not Lewandowski, a Mandzukic, he's just old and not getting any games, and then thinks, actually, fuck it, I'll go United. Unless it's something like that, or they redo the Dybala one, which that definitely won't happen, but I'm just saying, something like that where it was nearly going to happen, but you decided against it for all those reasons. Unless it's someone like that who's not playing or getting in anywhere, who's it going to be? Who's it going to be? Who's going to leave in January to come to Man United in this form if they're not on their way out of their own club or can't get game time or not the right fit? So, you know, for me, I'm not really trying to see us have a patch over in January. You know, I know we spoke about the Eriksen thing, and, you know, so that's up for debate. Will he make us better? I think yes, but he obviously is still a gamble. But there's not really many out there that you can realistically get where you can say, like, just go and break the bank for this person. They're not going to up and leave. No one's going to leave Leicester now. Fucking what, are they third in the league? Smashing it. Got consistent run under Brendan Rodgers. It's a more attracting project right now under Brendan Rodgers than under Ollie. Of course it is. Yes, money talks and security talks. Yeah, Maddison might think, fucking hell, I'll be on $200,000 a week straight away for 5 years. Because it is a job to some of these players. I get it. Harry Maguire made the jump as well when he probably looked at it and thought it's going to be a good season for Leicester. But sometimes,
well, Maddison's more of a Lingard as well, isn't he? He's got the fresh ego kid. You know, he is more of a social. That will be.
He might think commercially. Yeah, exactly. His agent might be talking to him, and you know, I know Marvin well, Fresh Ego, who knows Maddison well, because he's affiliated with Fresh Ego Kid as well. And he was saying that a lot of things, I'm not going to say too much, but he was saying like a lot of things would have to happen for him to come to United, this thing. So I think Maddison would be up for it. But even that, Mark, I was talking to my friend Shane. His dad's Ricky Hill, Luton legend. England. And I went to the game with them, the Wolves game, and me and Ricky Hill and Shane were just talking about players. And Ricky was out in the MLS, the league below MLS, played against Drogba's team and everything, and they were playing out there because Ricky was the manager. And just getting an insight to him of, like, he said he doesn't buy this whole, like, football's changed and it's like because it's such a fast pace and all that, and the level of football and the level of player has just dropped. What we celebrate as good players and top players is way off now, way off. Like Maddison and like Declan Rice and that tipped as like superstars. Like, don't get me wrong, Maddison looks decent, looks good. Is he top notch, going to get 15 goals a season from CAM, get over 10 assists? I don't know. I need to see a bit more. I need to see him do it at Leicester. He still ain't done that at Leicester yet. He's doing it in glimpses. He's looking good. He's looking, you know, good quality. But you still don't know. And I think we celebrate, like, a lot of players, you know, talking about Callum Wilson and that coming Man United. And What are we doing? What? Look at the level of that we're celebrating. There's only a few genuine top class world players. You think back to the golden era of the Premier League, like not even just the 90s, like the mid 2000s and that, your Drogbas, your Henrys, your Van Nistelrooys, you know what I mean, top players, and on the continent, you know, Inzaghi, Crespo, Raul, Trezeguet, Ronaldo, R9, Ronaldinho, these are top draw players. You know, right now I think we're celebrating a lot of mediocrity. So even the players we're chasing, I'm not even convinced half the time that they're that good. It's just that they're just better than what we have, and we're settling for that.
I think that's a good point, because I think that I've said this before about the 99 United team and how people compare Man City or Liverpool currently to that is just, you know, it's because you live in the now and you assume everything's better now than it was then. And the reality is, when you talk about someone like Maddison, you're spot on, and everyone will overhype the now because they're living in it. But the point is, the consistent quality across the league is shit.
Exactly,
I mean, Matt Letizia used to play for Southampton. If he was playing now, he'd be at Real Madrid. Like, he would, because he was scoring bloody worldies. Absolute worldies for Southampton.
The only top man that you're looking at, people like David Silva, Bernardo Silva.
Yeah.
Consistent top draw. Kevin De Bruyne. Pogba, he's got it in there somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like, top notch. Aguero, Kane, consistent. Big boy players. You know, even, you know, Ricky Hill was saying to me, everyone looks at Ruben Neves. If we're sitting there watching, just off topic, just to show you how you got to look at football, and it's a whole different perspective because he's been in the game and coached in the game. I thought, let me listen to what he's saying. Because I said, yeah, Ruben Neves, good, isn't he? Like, yeah, he's not that great. He's all right. I was like, nah, but look, he scored top corner. He goes, give him time, he can pick a pass, but he's not that great. He's not mobile. He doesn't get up and down the pitch. He's not great. And I just watched him, and he was like, look at his unwillingness to run back there. Look, should have took a touch, laid it off there. Look, and I watched his actual play, and I'm like, yeah, he's not Cruz or Modric, Ruben Neves. But 6 months ago, we're like, sign him up. I'll have Ruben Neves now. He dictates the play. And I was like, I was watching Wolves against Southampton. I saw Ward-Prowse have a better game than him running around. Do you know what I mean? So you've got to look at it in the context of, like you said, not just living in the moments of you see, like, oh, he stuck it top corner because you give him a bit of time to hit it. Like, when it comes down to it, you're going Real Madrid away because I always say that because we're trying to aspire to get back to that Champions League quarter final, two legs. Champions League semi-final, got to go away to Bayern Munich.
Mm.
What's he going to do in the midfield with Thiago on his back and Martinez and these man? What's he going to do with Cruz and Modric running around? What's he going to do then with Busquets running around? What then? Do you know what I mean? That's the level. That's the level we got to look at. Not, you know, what happens when he goes to Sheffield United and John Flex up his arse. Whatever his name is.
And also, you're going to pay like 80, 90 million for Madison
exactly.
as well.
Exactly. This
silly.
Is what I'm
and
saying.
Declan Rice,
and Declan
Rice, I think, is shit.
Man.
I don't think he's any good at all.
So that's just my thought on it, man. It's difficult now because the level of player that we're quoting to be fucking top notch is not. Noble's better than Declan Rice.
It's the world we live in. The market's not good and people overhype players. It's not the players' fault that, you know,
it's not,
football's never been so popular. There's so many brands involved, but the quality of it, I mean, I think Letizia is a very good example, but I think about Zola at Chelsea, Beardsley at Newcastle, you know, the amount of strikers that were out there. When you talk about Callum Wilson and you've got people like Chris Armstrong playing for Palace, who was way better
Bonkers.
Than Callum Wilson.
Look, fucking Kevin Phillips scored 30 goals.
For Sunderland, yeah. You know, the consistent quality across
the league.
Do you
know what I'm saying? These kind of men.
I bet there
Robbie
are
Fowler.
A lot of players who played at that time now, wishing they were playing now, thinking,
oh my God,
I'd be one of the best players in the
Hasselbank.
League.
Yeah,
people like Darren Anderton and stuff like that.
Yeah. This is what I'm saying, man. Robbie Keane, even prime Robbie Keane, prime Jermaine Defoe. What are you trying to say? That
Rashford's
oh,
they'd
on
be
their
one
levels
of the best in the league.
No. Mm. Do you know what I mean? No, they're not. These are top draw. Berbatov and that in his prime. Come on, man.
Yeah.
Come on.
It's true. We spoke about racism last week. I just want to bring this in because this is something I've been wanting to hear for a long, long time. And obviously, we had Patrice Everett on Monday Night Football with
Brilliant.
Jamie Carragher. And he basically came out and said that, you know, apologised for the T-shirts they all wore for Suarez and said that we got it wrong. Yeah. I hadn't actually realised that they put those T-shirts on after the ban as well. He said, you know, what message does that send out as a football
Bonkers.
Club that we did that? And, you know, fair play. It's the first time anybody from Liverpool I've taken any note of that's come out and apologised for something. And I don't know how Liverpool fans would feel about that, but the reality is, like Carragher said, it was ill-advised, it was a mistake, and we shouldn't have done it.
Fair play to Carragher. You know, fair play to Carragher. He does talk a lot of sense a lot of the time.
He
Carragher,
said get rid of Woodward the other week. He's on a roll, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. I don't mind him as a pundit. And look, although it's been long overdue, at least he's come out and said it. I think it's probably easier for him to say it now because he's not working for the club. He's not trying to get a job in there. He's a fully fledged pundit now, and he's not going to go into coaching, and you know, so his mouth can be a little bit looser. But it just shows you, innit? It just shows you, like, what he did say was very true, though. Take the Man United aspect out of it, and the sentiment, and obviously the issue. When your mate does something wrong, you do just want to defend him straight away. Like, it's just in you. You don't look at the context. You don't look at it altogether. You know, when you've done things on the pitch or whatever, when we got that lad sent off.
I've not done anything racist, though. Come on.
No, nothing racist. Just like, I don't know, you kicked someone or you did something. I'm like, no, what was it when we played against Football Daily?
I threw the ball at his head,
You know, I had to back you. I'm coming across, I'm backing you. And I'm like, well, actually, Mark shouldn't have done that sort of thing. But I'm going to back you. Do you know what I mean? So I see what he means. And as people, as establishments, as companies, as family members and friends, we've got to look at it and not be afraid to tell our loved ones or our companions, our colleagues, whatever you want to call it, our associates, that actually, even though we're on the same team here, you're bang out of order. You're wrong, and we're not backing you. There's a certain
element. The great thing I think about it is that if that happened on Sunday and Everett and Suarez were still playing, there is no way, because of all the good stuff that's being done about kick it out and everything, there is no way you would get Liverpool on Wednesday night coming out with t-shirts for Suarez. It just wouldn't happen.
I think
that's why the timing of this is perfect, because we have moved on from that, thank God, because he used the N-word. He used the N-word loads of times. And I know in his country, he says it's fine to do it. Well, mate, you're paid in our country and it's not fine to do it here.
Yeah.
There's just no way he'd be backed now. So that is that is progress.
No, it is. And I, against Liverpool, I saw some a fan getting kicked out, because I've seen the statement from United saying they confirmed they kicked a United out, the home fan, a home fan out the United end for alleged racial abuse. And it was just in front of me, like kind of just down to the left. I couldn't hear anything, but I could see everyone was standing up. But I thought it was because he was a Liverpool fan and he was sitting in the home end and that. And then you just hear the, there you go, man. So we've got problems within not just our own club, but within our own country, man.
Mm.
You know, our own teams. It's happening. It's not stopping. And I thought he did well to speak up, man, because as well as talking about Juventus and what it was like in Italy even before, he was like, look, they had some of the best times there. And some of it is all, most of it is about lack of education. It's not even about being racist. I say it when I went to China. Like the first couple of days, I'm not gonna lie, I found it tough. I was like, everyone's staring at me like I can't even get a taxi. Kids are like, little kids are like poking their parents and pointing. Me and Josh walked onto the train, the subway, and people were like literally getting their phones out undercover, thinking we couldn't see, and they're recording us. Like, Josh is mixed race, dual heritage, which is the PC word now, and he has like long hair, like out. So he's a black guy with long hair. Like, they had never seen it before. And it was after like the third day when I was actually, Flex, take your anger out of it, your emotion. These people are not racist. They're just intrigued. You know, they don't see black people in the flesh. You know, but that's when there's a difference between being rude and understanding and thinking, well, I'm gawping at someone, so it's not nice to do that. To then calling someone the N-word or this or that, and you know, but the racism we're seeing, like the one in Bulgaria and things in our country, is literally getting onto people because of the colour of their skin. It's not because I haven't seen black people before. England's one of the most multicultural places in the world, so people that are being racist here isn't because of lack of education, and that's what we've got to distinguish.
Well, I just think it's brilliant that Evra was on there and it was brought up, because it's a very bad time. There's a lot of this goes on in our country. We had the non-league game at the weekend that was called off. It does, and we said this last week after the England game in Bulgaria, that you know it is happening at home. We can't be sanctimonious. And I think the brilliance of that is that t-shirt thing is something that Henderson put a tweet out, and everyone was like, they put a picture of him. I think he said something about kick it out or something. And then one of the top replies under it on Twitter was him in that t-shirt. Well,
yeah.
But Carragher is a Liverpool legend, and whether he's involved in the club or not, is anybody, whether they agree with it, going to come out and say, no, Carragher's wrong? No, they're not. So the enduring message now is that t-shirt thing, whenever it gets brought up, and it does get brought up on social media by United fans a lot, whenever it gets brought up now, we'll always have that quote from Carragher saying, we shouldn't have done it. So, you know, and that really does up yours, Suarez, you're racist. Yeah. And, but you know what? I don't know, it's not for me to say it, but if Suarez actually came out now and apologised and said it's disgusting what's going on in football, I know a lot of people still hate him, but I think that sort of thing, if we're going to talk about education and stuff, those sort of things, I believe you've got to give people a chance. And look, maybe Suarez still thinks he was wrong done by, I don't know what he's like, he strikes me as the sort of person who probably does, but if he, you know, if he did come out and say, you know what, it was regrettable, I regret it, I wish I'd never done it, I'm really sorry and all that lot, then those things are powerful. So at least Carragher's done that, and it does draw a big line across that now, because you know, I know Carragher doesn't work for Liverpool, but he's a big legend of Liverpool, and he's basically said it was a mistake.
Yeah, he's still a voice and a big representation of what they stand for and them as a club. He's a mouthpiece, isn't he? Always be associated with them, so it is big. But I think on the Suarez thing, Evra summed it up perfectly. It was that, you know, Evra is saying, I even spoke to my mum, like, you know, are you going to shake his hand? And the whole game was about shaking his hand. And he thought, you know what, I'm taught to be bigger than that. You know, I'm taught to turn the other cheek. Like, you were racist to me, but I'm bigger than you. I'm stronger than you. I'm more powerful than you. I'm not going to let you put me down. So I will shake his hand. And he it was Suarez who actually, you know, pulled his hand away. And like Evra said, he pitied him. You're making it worse for yourself, man. I feel sorry for you. Like, you know?
Yeah, because I always Yeah, you're right. I was, when you were saying that then, I was like, didn't Evra not leave his hand high or something? I don't know, but...
No, he went in for it, and it was Suarez who done it. And then Evra tried to go back and say, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you not... You're not shaking my hand after what you've done to me. And then I think it was... Was it Gary Neville or Rio? Someone, I can't remember, kind of ushered him on to say, just leave it, just leave it.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why he was so as animated as he was at the end of that game, and I loved that. When he was on Five Live the other day, I brought it up as one of my best Liverpool United moments, because whatever had gone through in that period... to then even offering to shake the guy's hand, him not accepting it, and us winning the game. And I, listen, I would have done exactly the same thing, mate. Probably worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But yeah, I wouldn't say I'm impressed, because he did wear the t-shirt, but I did respect Carragher for coming out and admitting that, because nobody ever has, and I don't think you get a, apart from probably Gerrard, you don't really get a bigger voice from Liverpool doing that. So, you know, if Liverpool fans don't agree with it, well, I'm sorry, mate. You know, he was banned at that time as well, which I think is even worse that they were wearing the t-shirts. But as part of the education process, I think that would never happen again. You would never get that happening again. And I think that is definitely progress, which is something that we're not necessarily getting from United at the moment. But I've covered everything I want to cover, Flex.
Yeah. No, I think that's about right. I think we've talked about everything and what a difficult... Just quickly before you wrap up, I mean, obviously we're going out to Serbia tomorrow, early, me and Josh. It's actually warm out there, actually. I was looking to pick a big jacket up and hat and gloves, and I realised that it's like 26, 27 degrees, which is nice. Yeah.
You always think Serbia's freezing, don't you?
That's what I mean. I've got a lot of misconceptions because we was on the racism thing. I've been speaking to Vuj, who's a very good influencer with Poet. They used to be on Copper 90. He's Serbian. He's been really good, just let me know places to go. And I did say to him, I said, look, after the Bulgaria thing, and I don't mean to offend any Serbian fans watching this or listening to this, I had like maybe a stereotypical view that, you know, after seeing that stuff in Bulgaria, I was like, you know, what's it going to be like when I go to Serbia, Eastern Europe, you know, you hear things. And I thought, you know what, I remember when Robbie was telling me how he went to Russia for the World Cup, and everyone was like, you can't go there, don't do it. And, you know, there's good and bad people in everywhere. And I know that, you know, in Italy as well, they got a lot of problems, but it's easy to think that all over Italy's like that. But when I went to Turin, when we played Juventus last season, I didn't get any racial abuse or anything. So I'm not saying it's not there. Of course it is. But it doesn't mean you're definitely going to experience it. So I am actually looking forward to going there. But away from just the things that could happen, the issues, but what are you thinking about that game? Because I keep saying in the context of the group, it's just important for us not to lose. But if it's another game where we play poorly, don't have any shots on target and nick a 0-0 or something, which... it's going to be harder, I think, than the AZ game, because it's how hostile it's going to be. Is that going to be detrimental to us going into the Norwich game, or because he makes sort of wholesale changes, you don't think it matters?
I think that I can't remember what the score was with Astana and...
one. Oh, them two.
I think they won, didn't they? I've got a funny feeling they did win. So I think that when you play away after... the champions after the Europa League, it's very difficult anyway. I also think that, you know, I wouldn't be happy being 14th in the league if regardless, but he isn't even doing the thing that we thought that maybe would put us into 14th, is like playing the kids and that. He isn't doing that. So I don't see what team he can mix it up with on Thursday. Is he going to play Greenwood and Gomez and Chong away in Serbia? I don't think he will. I mean, but Belgrade did beat... Astana. So
they did, yeah.
I think they beat them 3-0 or something like that. So maybe 3-2, actually. I'm just trying to figure it out. Yeah, maybe it was 3-2. But the reality is they beat Astana, so they're going to be a little bit better than them. We know that we struggled at home to Astana, so... it'd be interesting. At some point, you would hope that United's ability will kick in. There's no chance that Pogba will play. The midfield worries me. Is he going to bring Mata and Matic back in? In which case, I think we'll be in for a slower game. But
Which he probably will. Yeah, we probably will do that, Mark, because we have. Although we're in the shit position and we don't want to see these players playing, we've seen how shit they are. He has got to be careful because, you know, the bigger game is Norwich. You know,
they would definitely start. I don't know where Matic was on the weekend. I presume he was injured.
I didn't even hear him say anything afterwards.
He was not on the bench, so
no, exactly. So his thinking's clear about Matic. You know, McTominay's the guy now. Matic is not even in. He's not the guy.
Which is correct.
Which is correct. So Matic will be out. You never know. Maybe in January.
But, are you confident we'll go out there and get a result? Well, I think we might get a result. I do.
I think we could get a draw. I can't see us winning.
In the context of the group, a draw is
that's
a
what
good
I'm saying.
Result.
Just don't lose and get out. It's not really that important. Like the only reason why the magnitude of it seems like it's bigger is because of the poor form that we're in. We can't buy a win in any competition right now.
Yeah,
that's why. And because the Rochdale one don't really count. So because that, let's face it, was a draw in 90 minutes. So I don't remember that feeling against Leicester where we won and it was so underwhelming. Anyway, that feels like years ago. I can't remember what it feels like to win. I can't. And that feeling festers in. And the players, if that's how we feel, imagine what it's like when you're fucking running around out there every week, you know? So, and plus wholesale changes against Partizan. I can't see them getting a result. Hostile atmosphere, difficult, in your face. I can't see us winning. But if we get a draw, then great. I just want to see us score. Fucking hell, is that too much arts?
Yeah, I'll have to do a bit of research on Partizan Belgrade for the preview, I think. I don't know a lot about them. But I imagine they're better than Astana. But yeah, probably a draw is
they're definitely better than Astana.
Is a fair result. Right, thanks everybody for listening. Make sure you are subscribing on whatever platform you're on. Please do give us a rating. Remember, the podcast is every week. And it's on all platforms. So make sure you're giving it a listen every week. Something a little bit different away from YouTube, which is great. And the games are coming thick and fast now, Flex. So we'll have lots
Absolutely.
To talk about.
Yeah, exactly. See you guys at the fan cams at Partizan, which they're keeping us in for an hour after the game. So if we've lost, there's going to be a lot of angry fans.
I must just say as well, I don't know how you would do it through iTunes. You'd probably have to go to the YouTube page. Just check the video description. But we have got our Christmas party now. It's on Thursday, the 5th of December. It's at Hotel Football in Manchester. So we've got a DJ, live show, everything. So get yourself down there. It's only £10 a ticket. Percentage of that's going to the Manchester Children's Hospital. And you get a free drink on arrival. So very, very good price for a very good event. Absolutely. Thanks, everyone, for listening.